The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online. Plus, we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to the Americano podcast, a series of discussions about American politics, power and prejudices. This year, 2024, is an election year in America, a presidential election year. And so we will be doing two podcasts a week rather than our usual one because we want to and because we know you can't get enough Americano in your life. I am delighted to be joined by John Rick MacArthur, who is the president of Harper's Magazine and a great friend of Americano. And we're going to be talking about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and his candidacy in the 2024 presidential election. But Rick, before I start on that, I thought I would just ask you to respond to Joe Biden's State of the Union last night. The newspapers are very clear that he came out firing. He was all guns blazing. The right, political right, are saying that he just uses anger to cover up the fact he's not a great public performer anymore. What did you make of it?
Well, he's never been a great public performer, but the sad thing about the State of the Union address is that the only thing anybody was really watching for was whether he'd make some terrible gaffe, whether he'd mix up Putin with Solzhenitsyn or Trump with Nixon or something. I mean, he's famous now mainly for garbling sentences. So everyone considers it a triumph that he's able to get through a speech without making a major mistake. I'm not sure. Maybe he did, but I wasn't aware of any.
I don't think there was any major gaffes. No.
Right. So they had him juiced up. But the most distressing thing beyond that, I suppose, is that his only real theme is that his unnamed opponent, because he never named Trump, is a danger to democracy. And you can be anti-Trump and still be impressed by the fact that Trump has enlivened American democracy. He's done nothing more than increased turnout. I mean, the turnout in 2020 was unusually high. It wasn't a record, but it was very high. Mm. And there's obviously popular support for Donald Trump. In some respects, more grassroots support than the Democratic partisans, because the Democrats are just saying, oh my God, we have to vote for him. Whereas Trump has enthusiastic support. Now, on the policy stuff, it's all very predictable. He wants to raise the rates on corporate tax, which is like saying nothing. He's not addressing. He keeps saying, of course, the Republicans passed the tax cut under Trump benefited the rich. But that's all the Democrats have done over the last 30 years also is benefit the rich and their Wall Street donors. He never talks about the carried interest. In other words, the loophole in the tax code that allows investment bankers and hedge fund partners to pay a lower capital gains rate on their personal, what's really their personal income. That never gets touched. But and on the pharmaceutical stuff, you know, okay, he's maybe going to get cheaper insulin. I forgot if he said anything about that, but he doesn't have any real big policy proposal other than, we must pass the aid to Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel bill. That's the crucial thing. And he correctly makes fun of the Republicans for blocking a deal on the border.
Well, I saw Elizabeth Warren, who you've written very cogently about for The Spectator before, was there cheering him on. And I mean, she is seen to be someone from the sort of authentic economic left in America. But you don't quite buy that, do you?
No, she's a party animal. She does what she's told, and she has to support Biden, even though when she was campaigning in 2020, she was considerably, she and Sanders were considerably to the left of Biden. And again, they would eliminate the loophole for carried interest. They would raise the top marginal rate on income tax. They would probably talk seriously about a wealth tax, which would be appropriate for some of the super billionaires who are now so influential, not only in public policy, but in university policy. They seem to run all the Ivy League schools now. Biden is the ultimate centrist Democrat. I mean, there's absolutely nothing daring or even vaguely left-wing about him, which is one of the things that I find amazing, because the Trump and Nikki Haley were constantly going on about the radical left that's taken over the Democratic Party. And Biden's signal achievement as a politician is to become president, of course, but his second most important achievement is to have destroyed the Bernie Sanders movement. They're silent. They're mute. They're non-existent. Warren cheerleads. She was never really for Sanders, but Sanders himself is unheard. You don't hear a word from him.
Yes. Well, Donald Trump released a pre-buttal to the State of the Union address in which he said, you know, it's time to tell Joe Biden you're fired and so on. But the person we're supposed to be talking about, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., released a response which was very pre-prepared. It was a kind of a montage of lots of old footage, sepia-tinged footage of Bobby Kennedy, his father, and JFK, the president, and so on. And it was designed to kind of be evocative of a kind of America that was greater, more confident, more of the envy of the world, and so on. And then at the end, he said, you know, that's the America I want to get back to, where we're not faced with this choice that nobody, that the vast majority of Americans don't want. He didn't say Biden and Trump, I don't think, but that was the obvious implication. And there were little shots of Biden and Trump in the footage. Let's talk about his candidacy, because he is on the ballot in various states now. But the Democrats are fighting that tooth and nail, aren't they?
Yes. And I checked, I did my homework and I checked. So far, RFK Jr. appears to be on three ballots, just three state ballots. He's probably close on about 12 or 14 states. And the DNC is worried, the Democratic National Committee, which Biden runs, is worried enough that they've filed a formal complaint with the Federal Election Commission claiming that RFK Jr.'s campaign is illegally using the his super PAC to collect signatures on petitions to get himself on ballots, which is just a classic Democratic Party shenanigan. That's what the Democrats specialize in, especially in states, machine states like New York and Illinois. They're always challenging ballot access for dissidents, for insurgents, and sometimes for Republicans. But in this case, they got to keep him off in certain states because he really could swing those states to Trump. He could take just enough. He and Cornel West. We shouldn't forget about Cornel West.
Yes.
Because RFK Jr. runs decidedly to the left of Biden on almost everything except Israel, which case he's, interestingly, an even greater cheerleader than Biden.
It's bad timing for him as a sort of tribune of the left that the war in Gaza is going on, because he is very pro-Israel, and the mood of the party is particularly among the base, if you like, or certainly the youthful part of the party is very, or the most energetic part of the party is very, very angry about Israel and angry about Biden's position on it.
Right. And so that's paradoxically, a very risky position he's taken.
Yeah.
I mean, he might try to turn it to his benefit by saying, I take a principled stand. You don't have to agree with me on everything. But the other bizarre thing about RFK Jr. is that he doesn't believe that Sirhan, an Arab, killed his father, assassinated his father. He thinks somebody else did it.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's going to become an issue or whether it has anything to do with his radically pro-Israel stance.
Yes.
But on the broader themes that his father came to support later in his career, because he was not always a left-leaning Democrat. He was himself, RFK Sr., was in many ways very centrist and on some things very right-wing. And he's always going on about corporate power, democracy. To my delight, he's circulating petitions to free or to drop the charges against Julian Assange. He's horrified, like as I am, and I hope a lot of left and right wingers are, by the persecution of Assange and the possibility that he's going to be extradited to the United States. So on a lot of things, you know, you get to the ballot box in November and you look at the choices and you might make a subliminal mistake and think that you really are voting for Robert F. Kennedy, the old Robert, the father.
Yeah.
And it could be just enough to tip a few states to Trump.
Yes.
Because people are so disillusioned with Biden, which is why they're going to fight him. They're going to fight him hard on ballot access.
So two senile candidates could be trumped by a dead one.
I'm sorry. Wish I thought of that.
It's interesting that you said about the Democrats wanting to stop him, and they do seem to be. Because I wonder whether really he will take it. The polls suggest that he will take more votes away from Biden than he will from Trump.
Yeah.
But I wonder, in a kind of disgruntled scenario, whether there are quite a few Republicans who might, or Republican-leaning people, who just don't like Trump and might. In fact, I met one on Monday. I met an American on Monday. I'm not sure if she was very representative of many groups in America, but she said, you know, she has been a lifelong Republican voter. She'll never vote for Trump, but she liked RFK Jr. and she'll probably end up voting for him. So I wonder if it necessarily will break mostly in Trump's favor.
Yes, that's absolutely a possibility. Although that might be a balancing factor on the war, on wars or American military posture around the world, because Trump at this point is the peace candidate. Biden is the war candidate. He's shouting for more money for war. And Americans, as far as I can tell, it's not like Vietnam days, which I actually remember, but there is a clear movement of American sentiment against foreign military engagement. There is vast disillusionment. Biden did the right thing getting out of Afghanistan. Maybe he did it clumsily or whatever, but he's actually was to some extent responding to the general feeling that we're overextended and we shouldn't involve ourselves in every civil war and every fight for liberty, quote unquote, around the world. Biden doesn't seem to have any hesitation about maintaining this posture. And I read the mainstream press very carefully, looking for evidence that they're finally noticing this. And where I did notice it was in South Carolina in the Republican primary. The New York Times was actually quoting people saying they voted for Trump because Nikki Haley is a warmonger.
Yes.
Nikki Haley is very close to the Biden traditional NATO Atlanticist, liberal interventionist, militarized foreign policy of the United States. And I feel like this is, to some extent, might be a referendum on that. So you can vote for Trump as the peace candidate, but you could also vote for RFK Jr. as the peace candidate, notwithstanding his support of Israel.
Well, obviously there's the Israel thing, but also RFK Jr. has said, called them realist things about the conflict in Ukraine. He suggested that the West sort of provoked it with NATO expansion. And interestingly, though, his son, I believe, is or has fought in Ukraine with the Ukrainians.
Right.
It's quite an enticing thing for him as a candidate, because not only is his son actually there fighting, he's actually saying things that are critical of the Biden administration as well.
Well, there's a genetic screw loose in the Kennedy family, and it's passed down to his son, because people like Kennedy's son literally believe that Ukraine is a replay of the Spanish Civil War.
Yeah.
And that they've taken the side of the Republicans against the fascists.
Yes.
And it's absurd. The comparison is absolutely absurd. But you will hear people saying this in conversation and on the internet. And so I think Kennedy passed on some of his nuttier instincts to his son. And I do think, again, a preponderance of Americans are sick of hearing about defending Ukraine to the death against Russian aggression and defending liberty and so on and so forth.
Yes.
Because they don't believe it. They've been disillusioned by Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, and of course, going back much farther, the invasion of Iraq, but also the liberation of Kuwait, a great democracy, Vietnam, et cetera, et cetera. It's been 50 years of lies, and people are sick of it. And they've also, even though our casualties have been relatively low since in all the wars post Vietnam, it's still enough, and there are enough wounded people and enough psychologically damaged people have come back from these wars that people are really sick of it. And Trump says, I don't believe Trump is a great negotiator. I don't think he's a true peace candidate, but at least he's offering an alternative to Biden's let's fight to the death.
Yeah, well, I wonder what you'd think of that. Putin the other day suggested that he'd like Biden to win again. And, you know, the media all said, oh, Putin's trolling. He obviously wants Trump, yeah. You know, blah, blah, blah. But right. I wondered about that. And I wonder whether you'd agree with me that actually Putin may well want Biden.
I thought he would prefer Trump because Trump would be more likely to make a deal with him. So I don't know what to make of that. I actually have not figured out what Putin might be up to, unless he's getting feelers, which is possible, from the White House about negotiations. Because one thing that would win it for Biden is a negotiated settlement in Ukraine.
Yes.
And
yes.
he might be doing a backdoor negotiation with Russia, which would be, of course, the best possible outcome.
Well, if he is doing that, he's playing a very, very subtle double game, because obviously the speech last night, it was full on Ukraine. We will back Ukraine to the hilt.
Right. Although we won't send our own soldiers. I mean, he's not that far gone.
No.
And when you hear some of the rhetoric, you'd think that this really is a replay of 1938 or 1939 or the Spanish Civil War.
Only Macron, I think, is saying that of the Western leaders.
That was extraordinary.
Yeah.
Absolutely extraordinary.
But I don't think anyone believes him or takes him seriously on it. But anyway, we're getting distracted. I would like to ask you a little bit about the Kennedys. You're obviously someone who understands the American left very well. And the place the Kennedys hold in the American psyche, in the Democratic psyche, obviously it's a pretty big thing. And America does think, Americans do think dynastically about their presidents. And RFK Jr., as we just discussed in his video, he does seem to be playing on that theme, that sense of nostalgia of a better time and of a golden, you know, a Camelot, as it was. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, there is still, yes, an overwhelming, in fact, they just revived Camelot at Lincoln Center very successfully, the musical, that is.
Yeah.
And there's still a kind of Kennedy worship in the United States, which is very unhealthy, but it's everywhere. There's been disillusionment, though, because RFK Jr. Took a position against vaccinations for COVID. And so he's now developed this reputation of quirkiness or downright craziness that doesn't fit with the Kennedy family legacy of public service. I mean, I'd like to think that Bobby Kennedy and his brother and Ted Kennedy would have been all for national solidarity in terms of getting vaccinations against COVID. But the son doesn't, RFK Jr. doesn't behave that way.
Yes.
On the other hand, he does represent this old fashioned sense that the Democratic Party should be the party of Franklin Roosevelt. It's really, this is all about what's left of the legacy of Franklin Roosevelt. Bill Clinton did a great deal to destroy that legacy and to reverse course, much more Wall Street friendly, corporate friendly, free trade friendly, and so on and so forth. Roosevelt would have been turning in his grave. I mean, they repealed the Glass-Steagall Act under Clinton.
Yes.
Biden voted for it, which was the separation between commercial banking and investment banking. And 8 years later, we had this catastrophic financial crisis, which is partly due to the repeal of Glass-Steagall. And we were headed towards national health care under Harry Truman, if you can believe it. Truman was the last president who really fought for national health insurance or a national health care system, Medicare for all, in effect. So there is nostalgia for the Democratic Party of the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s under LBJ, not including Vietnam. And if Kennedy was able to really capture that voice and evoke it, he could do better than being a marginal candidate, because there's a terrible, terrible disillusionment among Americans right now. But what we've lost, we almost made it to becoming a social democracy in the 60s, and now we've gone way backwards.
And there's something about the Camelot myth that also taps into America's tragic sense of itself, is there not? That, you know, there's always there's a death, or there's a tragedy, you know, there's an assassination, or the dream is always somehow ruined, and that makes it more golden and more glamorous somehow. And
that raises a practical question, a practical political question, which does actually worry me, and it must worry RFK Jr. and his mother, who's still alive, Ethel Kennedy. And that is, if he gets any traction starting in September or October, is somebody going to take a shot at him?
Yeah.
So while he could run on a redemptive platform, I'm going to redeem America to bring it back to the old fashioned democratic values.
Yes.
That my father and my uncle represented, my two uncles represented. But it also could raise the fear that he is another martyr in waiting.
Yes.
So, well, I worry about that.
You had a very interesting cover written by the great Andrew Coburn on Harper's Magazine. It was called Craving a Choice. A few months ago. And that looked at Marianne Williamson, RFK Jr. and Cornel West. It was a very interesting piece. And there undoubtedly is a craving for this choice. But what is odd is how you could argue that Bernie managed to turn it into votes and just got thwarted by Hillary Clinton. But this time, RFK is potentially on 15%, according to some polls. Others say 6%. But the other candidate, Marianne Williamson, has not had any traction. Nobody's been quite able to take on the Bernie movement, it seems.
And that's also partly because Bernie has been cornered. Bernie's allowed himself to be cornered politically. He has no leverage anymore. Anything he would say or anything he says critical of Biden is perceived as helping Trump. Mm. And Bernie doesn't want to go down in history as somebody who helped Trump get elected again. He's also, he has to make a decision about whether he's running for Senate. I think he's going to run for re-election in the Senate. So he may be keeping his powder dry. You may think that he'll be able to get more out of Biden in a second term, which is not true.
Yeah.
Biden views Sanders, the regular Democratic Party views Sanders as a virus that has to be stamped out. It has to be killed.
Yeah.
He almost won. He almost took over the party.
Yeah.
And they will never forgive him for that. By the way, if you don't mind my getting into historical detail, the Democratic Party tradition of stamping out insurgents goes back to also the battle between RFK, the father, and Eugene McCarthy, who was the true insurgent in 1968. And there are still people like me who like Gene McCarthy, who knew him. I knew him later in life as an adult, who are conscious of the fact that, the Kennedys represent the regular Democratic Party.
Yes.
And so they might not believe RFK Jr.'s story, but I do think largely, broadly speaking, RFK Jr. has the opportunity to, if he can give the old fashioned Democratic religion a new voice. In other words, you know, we're going to fight corporate power. We're going to fight for the people. We're not going to let Trump pretend to be the populist that he really isn't. He could get real traction. West, on the other hand, Cornel West, he's very funny, and but he talks too fast, and he's too intellectual. I mean, he's a university professor. I mean, he's great. He's fun. I know him well. We've had him in Harper's many times. I like him, but he's not a political candidate. The problem is he might pick up, because he's black, he might pick up some black votes that would otherwise go to Biden.
Yes. Well, interesting you mentioned the Eugene McCarthy comparison there, because I guess particularly on the war thing, correct me if I've got this wrong, but Eugene McCarthy was kind of, the Kennedys hijacked his anti-Vietnam message, which was resonating so well.
Yes, in 68, a guy named Allard Lowenstein went around trying to recruit somebody to run against Johnson in the primaries on an anti-war platform. And everybody turned him down. I think McCarthy was the sixth person Lowenstein asked. Yeah. And Gene said, okay, I'll do it. Yeah. And so he runs in New Hampshire. Johnson's not even on the ballot. They realize the party realizes that McCarthy's got traction. And they immediately organize a write-in campaign. But McCarthy gets 42% of the vote in New Hampshire. And a couple of weeks later, Johnson drops out of the race. Then RFK Jr., who turned down Lowenstein when he invited him to run, comes back and suddenly says, I will run for president.
Yeah.
And he was viewed as a terrible opportunist by the pro-McCarthy people, the pro-Gene McCarthy people, and was never trusted again.
Yeah.
And he then became much more anti-war because it was safer.
Yeah.
He was always a ruthless pragmatist, RFK Jr.
RFK Sr.
I'm sorry, RFK Sr. was a ruthless pragmatist, and he waited for McCarthy to make it safe to come in.
It's incredibly
possible he would have gotten the nomination. It's possible.
It's incredibly confusing with this RFK Jr. and Sr. because history seems to be repeating itself so much.
Right.
You just don't know where we are.
Right.
But I also wanted to ask you, Rick, what will happen? Let's say RFK Jr. starts getting some serious momentum, because there is a lot of disgruntlement in America about this choice between Biden and Trump. What happens if he starts getting 20-30% of the vote in polls and so on? America's never really broken out of the two-party stranglehold. Ralph Nader's probably the closest it came on the left, would you say?
Yeah, probably. You got to go back even further to find a credible, I guess, Henry Wallace in 1948. The problem he's got is still that the regular party machinery, you know, what you'll get is if he starts to actually get traction and get up to 10 or 12 or 15% of the in the polls, is you will get a hysterical campaign like you're getting aimed at Trump. From the liberal media, from the New York Times, Washington Post, the big networks, and the cable networks will go absolutely crazy on RFK Jr. You'll see campaigns and rhetoric saying that RFK Jr. is dangerous to the health of your children. I think that's the first thing they'll do. He's anti-vaccine. Your kids are going to die if he becomes president. Like they're saying, Trump is going to become dictator. He's going to make himself dictator like Hitler did.
Well, I wonder about that, because it's not just the COVID vaccine that he's skeptical about. He's skeptical about vaccines generally, and he thinks there's a connection between autism, which has increased massively, right. statistically, according to right. the CDC statistics, it has increased dramatically. And he blames that on vaccinations of children. I mean, we live in quite paranoid times, particularly since the pandemic. There is a sense that we were lied to by the governments. There's a big sense of distrust about that. And while it never shows up in polling, really, that significantly, I wonder if his vaccine skepticism will be a great weakness, or the great weakness that the Democrats will think it will be.
Yes, you're right to raise this, because it might be mitigated by the fury about lockdown and about school closings. And there's no question, I wrote about this for The Spectator, actually, for The Spectator World, that the Democratic Party was disproportionately influenced by the American Federation of Teachers and Randy Weingarten, boss, who's probably the most powerful unelected Democrat in the United States, who lobbied very effectively to keep schools closed by maintaining this absurd rule that you had to have 6 feet of distance between every kid, which of course made it impossible, between every student, which made it impossible to get that many students into a classroom. Whereas the CDC was already saying 3 feet's fine, and we could have opened the schools sooner. So this there's a smoldering rage about this, which could turn against Trump, because don't forget, Trump was pro-vaccine.
Operation Warp Speed, yeah.
And was by and large supportive of Anthony Fauci, who's now been discredited, really exposed as a kind of a charlatan, because the National Institute of Health funded the Wuhan lab and all this stuff. And he was contradicting everything he was saying in private. He was contradicting in public, or a lot of what he was saying in private was being. So RFK Jr.'s anti-vaccine position could be mitigated by his anti-lockdown position. And there is good scientific evidence now that countries like Switzerland and Sweden did just as well staying open as the countries that locked down.
And that's why I wonder if RFK Jr. would take potentially as many votes or more votes from Trump than he would from Biden, despite what the polls suggest, because that kookiness, a lot of natural Trump supporters are quite kooky. They're quite into conspiracy theories. They think there's a sort of poetic truth to them a lot of the time. And they're not always wrong. And so I wonder whether, I mean, I remember speaking to a Republican strategist quite a while ago about how to beat Trump in a Republican primary. And he said it's pretty much impossible, but the only thing you could do is you know, attack him on vaccines. And so I wonder if it could hurt Trump, RFK could hurt Trump.
Yes, RFK could. If he quotes Trump back to himself during his most pro the braggadocio about, I'm going to have the best, fastest vaccine in the history of vaccines, it could be very effective. DeSantis, interestingly, was not able to do that or didn't dare do it. I don't know why DeSantis didn't turn the tables on Trump, on Trump's pro-vaccine, essentially pro-lockdown position. Yeah. So this is a very interesting element, which we're going to have to wait and see. If I were advising RFK Jr., I'd tell him to try it.
Yes.
If I were a political advisor. One thing, though, I don't want to forget to talk about is free trade. One of the remarkable things about Joe Biden is how much he's copied from Trump's playbook. Now we have an industrial policy, supposedly, although it's just about building microchip plants. Which it's not gonna cut it for the working class. It's not enough. But Biden, having been a regular Democrat and a Clinton Democrat, voted for all the free trade agreements, NAFTA, permanent normal trade relations with China. He was for the Trans-Pacific partnership, or whatever it was called, which failed. The Trump tariffs have been maintained. Because Biden knows that his support of NAFTA lost him the election lost Hillary Clinton the election in 2016. There's now a study which I recommend to anybody who really wants to understand what happened in 2016 from the National Bureau of Economic Research by four very sober economists who simply did an overlay. They put the map, the electoral map in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania over a map of factory closures in all those states. And it's absolutely clear the correlation between districts where factories closed because of NAFTA, because the factory closed and moved to Mexico, and those districts switching from Democrat to Republican. And this is still the case. Where are we? We're now 8 years later. I talked to union members. My friend Bob Teeple was a UAW local chairman in Fostoria, Ohio. His factory, the Autolite spark plug factory, closed and moved to Mexico. And he's never forgiven the Democrats for this. He's never forgiven Clinton or Biden or any of them, or even he's a Trump supporter. And he tells me there's a lot of Trump supporters in the United Auto Workers Union. So what's left of the union movement is not a sure thing for Biden. And the simmering or continuing resentment for the damage that's particularly NAFTA, but because it's more famous, but PNTR was worse for the industrial Midwest. These people are still really angry. And they're not going to be convinced by a few microchip. They're not going to have their minds changed by some microchip factories.
The Green New Deal is not quite delivering the jobs in those states that, or doesn't seem to be delivering the sense of economic possibility in those states that it
promised. Yeah, and I can tell you that places, my poster cities are places like Utica, Fostoria, small mid-sized cities. There's no Green New Deal in those towns. There's nothing happening. And it wasn't just the people who lost their jobs in the factory. It's also the local hardware store that went out of business, the local grocery store, the real estate market's gone to hell. Nobody's buying or selling houses anymore. It is a catastrophe that the Democratic Party still will not face up to. I actually don't know what RFK Jr.'s position was on these free trade deals.
He certainly made skeptical noises about them. But he isn't really positioning himself as a kind of bring back American industry guy. I think in a
business. Isn't, yeah.
No.
Because
he's a nature guy too, isn't he? He's a big
conventional environmentalist. Right.
Yeah.
But the study, it's still very eminently clear that Trump won because of three states. He won by 80,000 votes in across three states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. That's how he got his electoral college majority. And yes, those states are going to be in play again this year, just like they were in 2016 and 2020.
And of course, in 2016, a lot of people blamed Jill Stein, the Green candidate, for taking votes away from Hillary, which enabled Trump to win in those states. And maybe RFK, that will be RFK Jr.'s role in.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's going to have to live it. But you see, again, if you're not hysterically anti-Trump, if you look at it coldly, you would say that the Democratic Party has got to, at least Biden's part of the Democratic Party has got to face up to working class resentment against the Democratic Party. I mean, that they're still very angry. And this is not just white working class, it's black and Latino working class. It's women too. Now, that's the last thing we haven't really, one issue we haven't talked about is abortion.
Yeah.
And the regular Democrats are banking on abortion winning the day for them. But again, if Trump or RFK Jr., I don't know what RFK Jr.'s position is on choice. I presume he's pro-choice.
Yeah, he seems to be, yeah.
But the long and the short of it is all you have to do is point out that this is something that if you accuse Trump of trying to pass a national abortion ban, that no one will be able to get an abortion. I don't think it's going to work because it's a state by state issue. I mean, the Supreme Court made it clear that this is going to be decided in the states. A national abortion ban would be ruled unconstitutional. It wouldn't fly. Nevertheless, that's what they think. They're going to prevail on abortion.
It's interesting about RFK and abortion because he seemed to suggest that he supported 15 weeks, which is about where Trump has suggested he might think the right sort of the federal level should be at 15 weeks of gestation. But he then instantly got a lot of resistance. And he pulled back and his spokespeople said he supported a right to choose.
You can see Trump, you know, not always the most tactically brilliant politician when he speaks to evangelicals. I'm sure you've seen him do it. He says, hey, we want to win this. Let's not go too far.
Yeah.
I've already saved 2 million lives, et cetera, et cetera. I've done a lot.
Yeah.
Don't spoil it for me and for you by forcing national abortion ban rhetoric.
Yes.
On me.
Well, because he can see what's happened in every special election since Dobbs was overturned, is that it's
right.
mobilized.
And the people are passing constitutional amendments state constitutional amendments trying to protect the right to have an abortion. God, I wish people would just start calling it abortion and stop calling it choice. But I can't get anywhere.
I totally agree with you. I can't stand all that. But that's my Catholicism kicking in. Rick, lovely to see you as always, and always fascinating talking to you. Please come on again soon.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's all for this episode of the Americano podcast. I'd like to thank my brilliant producer, Natasha Farrows, and urge you to leave a generous, kind, and warm-hearted review of this podcast on whichever platform you listen to it.